What I really want in life is to come to the end of life and not think that I played it safe and did things according to someone else's perception or what I thought I should be doing or what felt comfortable.
Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Colin. Happy to be here.
Can you give me just a quick overview? Like we talked about before, we're going to get into some just habit change stuff, and we're going to talk about your huge diet transformation. But what I really want to unpack is like the habits, behaviors, and mindsets around that, because like most people know that they should be eating better or whatever, but it's like people, you know, they get stuck in, I'm motivated one day, and then the next day, like, well, I'm not actually doing anything about it, right? So give me a quick intro and let's just dive right into that transformation.
For me, so I started a carnivore diet back in 2016. Before that, had been interested in ketogenic, paleo, ancestral eating type patterns. I was coming from a sports background with, probably some disordered eating, a lot of gut health issues, poor body composition, and wanted to fix that and found the carnivore diet before this whole craze and all the resources were out there to help people. And I kind of dove into it head first. Already coming from a meat heavy, high protein keto style diet, and just really embraced it. I can talk about some of the habits that got me started on that and got me hooked on it. But it really transformed my health, made me feel much better, improved my energy tremendously, mental clarity, digestion, ability to perform in the gym, mood, and the like. And it improved a lot over time. And then, I did 3 years of a strict carnivore diet. I started a podcast called The Carnivore Cast, where I interview folks like you, as well as, researchers, doctors, N equals one case studies. And since I've incorporated more plant foods back into my diet, treated it kind of like an elimination diet, even though I did 3 years very strict, and I'm feeling great doing it. So that's kind of my background.
So you said athlete. So again, what I really want to get to is like, let's figure out what your mindset was before and like, what were you thinking and looking for? Because all change always starts from some kind of desire to get some other effect or whatever. So I want to really dive into that. Because for some people, if you have like a major health issue and your doctors are failing you, then it makes sense you're going to try every diet that comes across your plate, because like you want to try anything to get, feel better, right? But for other people, it might be like, well, I just really want to be healthy, or I want to perform a little better, whatever. So I guess the desire for a lot of people isn't as strong. And so, I want to kind of just understand that. Like, where were you before, and what was the reason for trying something like a carnivore diet, which at the time was actually pretty extreme?
Yeah, for me, ironically, it is extreme. It seems extreme from the outside. But my motivation to start a carnivore diet is I wanted something easy. I wanted something simple I could follow. And I also, I think everyone who has body composition goals is kind of looking for the cheat code, the way you can eat as much as you want, whatever you want, whenever you want, still be healthy, fit, look good. And for me, that was as much meat as I want, whenever I want, until I'm full and then stop. And that's how the carnivore diet was kind of pitched at that point. And, I've changed my mind on a lot of these topics, but I was very much a denier of a lot of, calories in, calories out, and things like that. And so I dove headfirst into it, and I was really looking for a way that I could put in the minimal amount of effort and get results. And I almost think that's an awesome habit and tip is find a way to make it easy for you. To your point, people start out super motivated, super excited to start a new exercise regime or diet intervention, and then you fall back on either willpower or habits. But just make it easy for yourself. Don't sign up for 10 CrossFit sessions per week and say you're going to stick to that for the rest of your life. Make your goal so small that you can't fail. And that's kind of what the carnivore diet was for me, is it was just something that made the rules really simple. I wasn't saying, I'm going to track my macros to a T. I'm going to eat exactly at these times and these portions. I was saying, hey, this is something I think I can sustain with a lot of enjoyment and try it out. I already enjoy eating meat, and I'm going to find ways to set myself up for success, which included, joining a bunch of Facebook groups, talking about that community support aspect, asking a lot of questions, getting books on it, diving into the science. And that way I didn't feel like it was that extreme. I didn't feel alone. So I think those two pieces, the making it easy for yourself and also finding group support and a community you can ask questions of and not feel like such an outsider when, you know, people are coming up to you and saying, just eat a cupcake, just, you know, just have a piece of this, have this bag of chips. Like, what's it going to do? What's the matter? You're not a bodybuilder, whatever. Having that community support can be really powerful.
So it sounds like you had a personality trait that was like, you know, I want it simple, or, you know, some people, I don't like to use the word lazy, but some people say things like, oh, I'm lazy. So I always like pick the easy route. I don't think that's the best way to label it, but it sounds like your personality set you up for success because you, for some reason or another, you identified that you needed to keep it very simple, and all the habit research backs this up. Like, you know, they say until you can do like one pushup a day as a habit, don't try to do 10 or 20 or whatever. Like, people set these grandiose goals and then they don't get there because they haven't actually thought about how habits are built and how you stack them in consistency and all these different things. So was that something that has just been a constant in your personality where you try to like find the easy path? Or was it like you were so enamored with school or something else in your life that you didn't have time? Like, why did you think that way?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of the two. At the time, I was working about 90 hours a week.
Did you say 90?
Yeah, 90.
Okay, well, so there you go. But this is good because like it shows you the environment and also the mindset, which so much of change in with humans is like what's already going on in our environment. Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff I really want to unpack, because I think people can use examples like this to then identify what's going on in their life and then make changes, right? So I think it's super important to kind of go, like, keep going. Let me know what else was going on at that time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to brag. I'm not a single mom with two jobs and five kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was working in a very hard, stressful career. Like I said, 90 hours a week. It was investing, where you're kind of always on. And if you're not responding to an email within 30 minutes, like, what is wrong with you? 10 minutes. And I was under a lot of stress. I was probably stacking cortisol in a lot of way, you know, drinking a lot of coffee, fasting, sleeping poorly, even though I tried to really emphasize my sleep, you know, working out intelligently, I thought at the time, in terms of resistance training, in a great relationship with my now wife, but we're both working very hard. She had a demanding career where she was working 80 to 90 hours a week in consulting and traveling. And, you know, I was in a position where sometimes I just didn't know where my next meal was going to come from. And it became very easy for me to say, you know, I didn't try to go out and preach my diet to people, even though I had this podcast about it and was really into it and understood the science. When I went out in social situations, again, I would just try to make it easy. I would say, I really like meat. And people would go, oh, okay. And, you know, when I ordered at a restaurant and had some really strange order, like, bring this dish, the burger, no bun, no toppings, no fries, no sauces, just the burger. Oh, and can I have five of those? People would be like, what? And I'd just say, I really like meat. Makes me feel good. I'm not dead yet, or something like that. You know, just make a joke out of it, make light of it. And I think that's another thing that holds a lot of people back is these social barriers and stigmas. And, you know, a lot of people make the point that you almost have to be abnormal in today's society to succeed and get by, whether it's in terms of your diet, your habits for work, how you think about the world, how you digest news. And so I just made fun of myself. And I think that's a great way to get by when you feel social pressures, you feel like you want to fit in, which a ton of people ask me about when it pertains to diet, but I think it applies to so many other aspects of life.
Yeah, it really does. So that was, how long ago was this? Let's get a timeline going.
This was 2016, 2017.
And today, paint me a picture of what it's like today. Like, are you in the same career? Do you have the same demanding schedule? You know, have you changed things like consciously because that was too stressful? Like, what are you at today? Let's compare it.
Yeah, thankfully, I've moved jobs a few times since then. I now work in strategy for a big tech company called Better, which helps people get digital mortgages faster and easier. That's a problem for people trying to buy a new home is they can't close their mortgage in time, so they miss out on the home they wanted because they couldn't get financing in time. So yeah, I work for that company. I work in strategy. It's far less demanding, more flexible, obviously with COVID and lockdowns. I work remotely from my apartment. You know, I have a dog. I'm happily married. Life is great. I can't complain. And I've you know, expanded my diet. As I said, I'm much more into exercise and walking a lot and training a lot than I was back then. And so I've implemented a lot of habits around my lifestyle, my wellness and mindfulness that I think I'm in a lot. Yeah, longevity. Yeah. And I feel like I'm in a much healthier place personally than I was then. And some of that is just, you know, when you get out of school, chasing money and chasing ambition and prestige is like a very easy thing to mm-hmm. set your North Star on. And I think I had a certain aspect of that. And also, you know, as Aziz Ansari says in Parks and Rec, sometimes you gotta work a little so you can ball a lot. So I grinded definitely in my early 20s, and now I'm getting to a place where I'm a little more comfortable and can round out my person and my interests in more ways.
Yeah. Okay. So you get that first job, you're going through a big diet change, big health change, like a lot of things change as a result. What happened towards the tail end of that job? What was the next big step? Because again, like we talked about before the show, you know, the podcast now we're focused on behavior change and like those big impetus moments in people's lives that I want to really unpack and understand, like, what were you thinking? Where were you at? What was the big struggle? Like, how long did you struggle with it? How did you get over? So can you identify what some of those next steps were, and were they kind of conscious, or was the combination of like feeling like you wanted a simpler life and then like opportunities came up and maybe you made a different decision this way because it was less stressful, or was it just like pure engineering?
Yeah, it was a combination. I mean, looking back, it's always easy to paint a picture of how every step of your life was super intentional and you always had a grand plan and you can weave the details together. But yeah, there was a lot of kind of randomness and spontaneity in there. But I was getting to a point where I enjoyed the work. I found it really exciting and intellectually stimulating. But like I said, there was just a complete lack of control. Mm-hmm. I felt no control.
Yep.
Someone asked, there was a like game I was playing the other day with my wife, this conversation starter game. And they said, what is your definition of freedom? And part of what I said is not having control of my time. And I felt like, you know, I had money, I had great apartment, great relationship, but I felt like I couldn't control my time. I felt almost like it's inappropriate to use this word, but I felt like a slave. I was tethered to my phone, to my computer. I was waking up in the middle of the night to email notifications so I could respond to them. I was, you know, go home with my family for Christmas, and at the drop of a email notification, I had to cancel all my plans with them and work for 6 hours. And, you know, my parents are in their 70s. They don't get that. They don't understand what that is. And so that was awful. And I went to Cuba over the holidays, tried to unplug, and, you know, there was no internet there. So we took a full week, me and my wife and my mother-in-law, and we had a great time there. Actually, some horrible stories from Cuba, but got very sick, came back and, you know, landed from the plane and had a horrible time getting back. It was the middle of the winter of 2018 or something like that, when like JFK closed and flooded and Logan was closed and all these things. And so we finally got back home near midnight, and I opened my phone to a slur of terribly angry emails, calling me all kinds of names, just being completely upset, and basically went in the next day, like still getting over terrible food illness, practically went to the emergency room that morning, and just walked in, got yelled at by my boss for like hours about mistakes I had made, and how I was inaccessible on vacation. And I made a decision right there, like, this is not for me. There's no amount of money you could pay me to keep doing this.
Yep.
And so I said, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to spend the next 3 months finishing this deal I'm on, or 2 months or whatever it was, which was painful. And after that, I'm going to walk in the day the deal closes, which is exactly what I did. And I'm going to say to the head of the firm, like, this has been great. This is not for me. I need something else. I need something more sustainable where I can have boundaries and guardrails and think about the next step of my career. And I thought very hard about how I would say that and what I would do. And they took it very well. They were super supportive, which was awesome. And they helped me find a new job, someplace where I could have those guardrails. I could still challenge myself, but I could, you know, really dedicate my energy and my full self to work while I was there and enjoy it and also perform better while having more separation to do the things that were important to my mental and physical health outside of it.
Yeah. So, okay. Real quick question before we get back to that. Why, or maybe this is just a personality thing and you can't identify it, but based on the story, it sounds like a lot of people would be like happy to go to that boss, that same boss that was grilling them out, and just like, F you, this, that, and like give them their mind. But it sounded like you were just like, either you decided it would have had a negative repercussion, or maybe it's not your character and you just don't even really go there. Like, did it take time for you to kind of let go of the resentment, or are you just kind of naturally one that just lets it roll off? Like, how did you muster that up to do that so intelligently? Because like you said, they've helped find you a new job, right? And you know, at the end of the day, you attract more flies with honey than vinegar, right? So it's generally almost always a better strategy, right? But what was that internal monologue like thinking about that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting you observed that. I am in my mind, at least, I'm a relatively short temper, pretty prone to anger guy. But I think I've been able to correct that through a lot of reflection, meditation, reading stoicism. And a lot of the people that work with me have one or two reactions. They either say, you're completely stoic in the negative sense of the word, like you have no emotions, you're just calm, and you don't really seem to like smile a lot or anything like that. Or they say, like, you have resting bitch face and I thought you hated me the whole time you worked here. Yeah. And really, a lot of times I'm able to just contain those emotions. But in extreme circumstances, especially when I'm sleep deprived, I really do want to be the person who, you know, just walks out or just is very direct. And I don't like to mince my words or play politics. But my wife really is great at those things. And I think she, you know, really checks me and, you know, helps me. And when I say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to quit tomorrow, things like that, she, you know, talks me down and talks about the importance of the longer term relationship and, you know, how to position it, how to talk about it. And I'm naturally either a very short temper person or have these quick reactions to things, or I'm an extreme planner and worrier. I know that about myself. I'm always thinking about the next thing, thinking months, years, or at least like weeks and days in advance, and what I'm going to do in a given situation. And so it's really good to have that kind of yin and yang. She's very much someone who's in the present, has fun, enjoys the moment, and is really good at that. But also, like, is very good at taking a step back and taking her time with those types of situations.
Yep. Sounds a lot like some things in my life. And we have a lot of similarities that way with the planning and always living in the future. You know, like for me, it's like build, next, tomorrow. And then having, you know, kids and these other things, like, you just realize that, you know, the future never exists. And all we ever have is like this moment. And so, like, by putting myself in a future that doesn't exist, I'm literally living in La La Land. And it does really sap happiness in a lot of things. So you mentioned stoicism, because actually for me, stoicism has been a huge influence in my life. You know, losing my father when I was 18, I went to a lot of reading and books. And one of those books that I found was actually The Art of Living, which was a translation of Epictetus's work. I think her name was like Sharon Leibel, but I've gifted that book more than any other book that I've gifted. I've literally bought, you know, 50 copies of that book. And stoicism has just been like this thing that I keep coming back to. So when you say, like, you did things to work on your anger, right? So, like, give me some specific, like, you wake up tomorrow and it's part of your daily routine, or you just randomly pick up a book on stoicism every so often, or is it more conscious and regimented? Like, what are some of those specific things you did to work on something like anger, which I feel like is something a lot of us need to work on? It's almost like a constant that we need to be aware of, or it will take over.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like I've solved it, because I certainly haven't.
Of course not.
Still have my moments. For me, just meditation, and specifically, you know, not the type of meditation. I mean, this can still work, but people often think of meditation, and I did for a long time. I've been meditating since I was 16, as a form of calming down and just emptying your mind. That works. But what's been even more helpful and practical for me is Sam Harris's Waking Up app and some of the meditations he has about incorporating mindfulness and being aware of your emotions and thoughts during the day. And, you know, not trying to clear them, but trying to recognize them and see them and sit
just
with
observe
them.
That.
That's been huge for me. And, you know, there are always steps to everything, right? And so one step is, you know, being able to calm yourself down. Another step is like recognizing emotions when they come up. Another step that I've gone through with my wife, and it's almost like embarrassing how much time I've spent reading meditation books and listening to meditations and practicing, I still have these shortcomings. And one thing that's helped more recently is my wife and I have just started incorporating these things into our conversation. We'll say I can feel myself right now starting to get angry. And then the other person can say, okay. And it's almost like instead of me yelling or saying something nasty, just say, you know, I feel really hurt right now. I feel myself getting worked up and this is not going to be a productive conversation, or
yep.
I'm going to say something that is not going to help. And almost making those like meta comments to each other helps not only our communication and our conversations tremendously, but it also helps me, even when I'm alone, see thoughts come up too. So it's almost changing your dialogue can help incorporate some of the mindfulness practices into your day.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. It's like, we all have those friends that are just completely not self-aware. Like I'm sure yeah. each person can kind of like identify through them, where they just kind of go through life and whatever's going on, you know, they're like, if it's great, they're all happy. If it's not great, they're all Debbie Downer or whatever. And a lot of times yeah. they aren't even aware that they can change how they're responding and how they're living in the moment, right? Awareness is just the most powerful thing. 'Cause like when you don't have awareness, you can't actually consciously change anything in your life. Right? Like you have to be aware first to even know and realize that, like, okay, I have this ego and I have these inner emotions and I have these things as a byproduct of my environment. And I also have control, right? But I got to be able to see that I have control before I can actually have control, right? They could say it's like the elephant is like this big subconscious thing that kind of moves us forward against our will. And most people are not the rider on the elephant. They're just like being pulled along by this huge momentum.
Yes.
Right. And so I just feel like it's so powerful.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're a big reader too.
Yeah.
And like, obviously you're into your self-help, personal development, like your, you know, meditation, your reading, whatever. Are there any other habits or things that you've kind of turned to that have been useful, that have helped with this or anything?
Yeah. I think listening to podcasts like yours, Colin.
Yeah. And, for me, it's huge. Podcasts are huge.
It really helps. And audiobooks, just having that, you know, other habits are like, just trying to make more of my day automatic too. People.
Okay. Can you unpack that? Can you and give me like an example of like today or yesterday or something.
Yeah. People see it as boring, but like probably I always think about this funny thing I think about where like people think of successful people like Bill Gates or Richard Branson or however you want to define success, whatever. And they think their lives are completely different than mine, but you know, probably a lot of their lives are the same. They
yes.
a big amount of their life, sleeping, eating, going to the bathroom, like walking around, you know, getting up from where they're sitting and so, like
travel,
the actual time that they spend doing activities that are super different than what you're doing is a smaller portion of your day than what you think.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, not because of that, but that's just something I've observed. I try to have the first, you know, probably 2 hours of my day and the last 2 hours of my day are almost identical every single day. And a lot of the middle of my day is pretty similar as well. And so when I need to focus or work on something in the middle of the day, you know, I've already accomplished a lot or I'm set up well. So to give some specific examples, you know, my nightly routine is like, there's a specific time where I turn off screens, I turn off exciting activities, I stop watching like anything violent or anything that's going to get my heart rate up. You know, I do a certain amount of stretching a few hours before bed. I do some red light therapy. I take a hot shower. I stop eating at a certain time. I wind down the lights. I, you know, have some conversation with my wife and maybe we watch a pretty relaxing TV show together or play a game together. You know, we put the dog to bed at a very specific time. Dogs and children are great for this, by the way. Maybe not children, but dogs help you set routines.
Yep.
You have to have one. And that just makes things so automatic that it's not only like freeing up mental capacity for me, but also my body is like, okay, he's doing this stuff. He knows I guess it's time to go to sleep soon. Mm-hmm. And same thing in the morning. Like I could be almost blackout drunk, like completely inebriated in a totally terrible mind space. And, you know, I would know what to do for the first 2 hours of my day. Cause it's just
it would help
like
you get out of that
autopilot.
Too.
Yeah, exactly.
Help you get out of that negative mind space. Cause the routine,
exactly.
The ritual. Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's super important. In fact, it's funny you mentioned the time thing and sleeping because I was writing today and I was writing like an outline for like a video I wanted to do. And it was about basically how people spend time. I mean, I've been observing, you know, friends and family over the years, you know, employees, I've always been interested in how people spend their time because like for me, long ago, I made that kind of growth mindset oriented, like the idea between like, if you spend your time well, you will get good results. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky to kind of connect that so that when I feel like I'm, you know, working and being productive, like I feel good because I feel like I'm investing in my future. Right. And so I've always been curious as to like looking at other people, how do they spend their time? And it's fascinating because it's very clear to see that a lot, like anybody that's self-made in any way that has any kind of success or is maintaining anything that requires like effort is like a lot of times they have pretty good routines and they're at least, you know, they at least have a baseline routine where they can maintain whatever level of success they have. And then as it goes in life, like you might get a certain way with that routine, but then if you want to get to the next level, you might have to like double that or you know, tweak the routine even more or figure out like how to optimize what you're doing, right? It's always a time investment. And I somehow stumbled across an article about like the average amount of minutes and hours in a life, right? And so you mentioned sleep. Mm. So apparently we sleep like 26 years of our life. If our average life is 79 years,
wow.
We work like 15 years. There was something like we spent about 7 to 8 years on screens. And then the one that was really depressing was we spend barely a year socializing. Like with, imagine that with people we actually care about. And like, it's one of the most rewarding things in human life. We only spend a small amount of that in our modern world. Whereas our ancestors would have spent hours every single day. Like talk about a huge mismatch. Right. And it's like, I just feel like people need to become more aware of how they spend their time and routines help you become aware of that. Right. Because they help save you a lot of time, but they also help you kind of just shine a spotlight on like, what, how am I spending my time right now? Like, what am I doing? Right. And people that I found that aren't, you know, really building something or, you know, by society standards of success, those people are the ones that struggle with being aware of their time and they struggle with building routines. I literally think routines are everything if you want to be successful nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an amazing article on waitbutwhy.com. It's called The Tail End. And it visualizes a human life in 90 years and shows it in like months
and blocks. Weeks. There's like a big block.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like further down in the article, they have like number of Super Bowls you have left in your life. And he plugs it in for a 34-year-old person. And it reminds me of something that Sam Harris brings up a lot in Waking Up. He says, you know, we go through our lives as if the future is infinite. But any given interaction, any given thing you do in your day could be the very last time you do it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So like this might be the last time you go to a ski resort. This might be the very last time
you listen to this podcast or any podcast. Say,
yeah, you have a conversation with this friend. You might have 10 more interactions with your mother or father. Like you just don't know. We're just living life as if there's an infinite loop in front of us. And it sometimes feels like that, but it's really not. And by having routines around some of the mundane stuff, you can more appreciate and be present for the stuff that matters.
Yeah. And spend more actual time on the things that matter, which in our, you know, our modern TV screen addicted culture, like we have, you know, multi-billion dollar corporations whose entire purpose and profit motive is to get you using something that removes you from the moment and that removes you from the things that actually matter and then focuses you on things that don't matter, politics, social media, other people. Like it's amazing that this is actually what's going on in 2020 and nobody really talks about it as this nefarious thing that it actually is. It's insane, right? So, okay, to close out, we got a few minutes left. This has been super actionable and I want to do a few rapid fire questions where you give kind of a 1 or 2 sentence answer, and then we'll just kind of like drill through a bunch of these real quick. I got about 8 questions here.
Let's do it.
All right. So what really drives you in life?
What drives me in life is my family, my loved ones, and being the best manifestation of myself that I can.
How often do you think about that? That actual answer you just gave me. How often, like, do you have reminders or you just kind of like intuitively know that? Do you like think about it regularly? Do you meditate on it?
I think I journal about it. Journal, a few times a year.
Yep, that's good. Okay. What do you really want in life?
What I really want in life is to come to the end of life and not think that I played it safe and did things according to someone else's perception or what I thought I should be doing or what felt comfortable.
Yep. In fact, that's actually one of the top 5 regrets of the dying. One of them is, I wish I would have lived a life for myself and not others. It's crazy.
Yeah.
What are your fears? If you around, like, if you aren't successful, or, you know, I guess we kind of answered that, but like, what are some of the things that if you don't maybe accomplish some of your goals, like how do you think that'll make you feel?
Yeah, I think I'll feel obviously regretful, feel like I've wasted things, and also feel like I've let down some of the people that I want to accomplish those things with, like, you know, having certain social experiences or travel experiences with my wife. I'll feel like I didn't give her the happiness in life she deserves.
Oh yeah, totally. That's a good point. What are fears if you are to become successful and get there? Do you have any fears around that? Because a lot of people actually do have fears around success.
Yeah. I think it comes back to like a lack of freedom. I have a giant fear. I have a giant perception that success equals
more money, more problems.
Busyness, more money, more problems. Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm.
No, totally. And if you actually look at a lot of people, the uber successful become successful usually because they become so addicted to their work that it's like their entire life, right? Mm. So then when you get to that point where you have that success, it's really hard to turn that off. Like you've become somebody over 40 years that like is obsessed with like investing or building businesses or hostile takeovers or whatever that is. And then you're supposed to just like, what, like enjoy your money and spend time with your family, even though for 40 years you didn't, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I've thought about this for years and it's actually changed, you know, getting a little bit of money and having some success. I'm keeping that at the forefront of my mind, you know, family, purpose, like how I'm spending my time. And then for me, it's a big focus on building systems and operations and being able to like delegate and lead people and inspire and do things that are infinitely scalable that don't require like every minute of my day or every, you know, like every little neuron in my brain to focus on. Right. And it's amazing what you can actually do. The internet has made it so that you don't actually have to work 80 hours a week and you could become very successful. Right. Yeah. So, but a lot of people don't take advantage of that because they become so addicted to the thing they're pursuing. So it's just something to be aware of. Anybody that's like type A, you got to be aware of the things you're giving up to get the things that you think you want. Because when you get the things you think you want, you're actually going to wish you would have paid attention to the things that actually mattered.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point.
Greatest achievement of 2020.
Greatest achievement of 2020, living in a basically 300 square foot living room with the dog and two people who are on conference calls all day and doing 60 interviews after getting laid off and dealing with a giant insomnia problem and getting sick. And above all of that, maintaining a healthy and happy relationship and working through all those stressful events with my wife. So
that's amazing.
In short, not getting divorced.
Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. And I just went through some cedar fever flu like thing for almost a month myself. And you know, type A, like I need to work every day and then not being able to, it's like a really hard thing. It's literally a mental battle for somebody like me. Right. And I just have to remind myself like, okay, well, if 11 months out of the year, you're feeling great and getting stuff done and you got this, you know, little hiccup, then use it as an opportunity to be grateful for those 11 months and be grateful for your health when you come out of this and be grateful for all the things that you have, you know, instead it's like we go through the middle of it and those woe is me feelings kind of come up. Like I sometimes find myself saying things like, oh, I'm just over this. I'm sick of this, whatever. And then I just kind of think like, what am I saying right now? Like, what am I saying right now? Am I being impatient because I'm not getting better faster than I think I should? Like, just shut up. Like, it makes no sense. It serves no purpose, you know, but that's, again, that's an awareness thing. Cause it could so easily, you can so easily fall into those negative thought patterns, which then ironically are more likely to keep you sick because you're focusing on the very thing and then you're going to manifest it. And yeah. So, all right, we got one more, Scott, and I'm gonna let you go. So
great.
What has been an unexpected source of joy for you either recently or in 2020 or something? Let's just say 2020.
I would say I should think of something more sophisticated and interesting, but getting a dog has just added a lot of joy to my life. I thought it would be all responsibility and burden, but actually that burden and that responsibility, you know, I've been someone who for a long time was like, I never want to have kids. They ruin your life. Mm. They slow you down. It's just this weird evolutionary urge that people are fulfilling. But actually that responsibility and that need to give and take care of another being has really added a lot of happiness in a much more deep way than a just, oh, I get to play and pet a dog. It's like given my life a purpose and a routine in a very like elementary basic way that I have really enjoyed.
Yeah, there's actually research that shows that people with dogs are happier and live longer too.
So there you go.
And I will say, this reminds me of a quote that Naval Ravikant, he,
yeah, you
know, like he's, I love him, but he said something to the effect on Twitter. It was like, you need to either have kids or become a saint because you have to be able to love something other than yourself. And I thought that was really, that was really good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Scott, this has been awesome. Appreciate you coming on and sharing. Let everyone know where they can find you. And all obviously all the links to everything will be in the show notes.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Colin. You asked great questions. This is by far the most reflective podcast that's made me think the most
good,
that I've done. So I like I said, I started the Carnivore Casts podcast. It's a podcast about ketogenic, carnivore, meat-based diets. You don't have to be carnivore to listen. And you can find that at carnivorecast.com or search CarnivoreCast on any podcast app or social media. And I'd love to hear from you. Send me a DM, ask questions, shoot me an email. And I also recently started YouTube after your suggestion.
Good job, man. Awesome.
You challenged me on my podcast. And so I did daily videos for the first week of January, and I'm doing more there. So check out CarnivoreCast on YouTube as well.
So it's CarnivoreCast on YouTube, right?
Yep.
Okay, great. So everybody listening, go over, give his video some comments, some likes, help him stoke the algorithm, give him a, you know, an attaboy for getting it done. Scott, this has been awesome. I appreciate it. And I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Colin. Have a good one.
Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.